I'm so grateful to be invited and honored. Thank you so much. I don't come, but this is one of my favorite places to come to, because you are all such wonderful people. I just love you. So thank you. So, Desmond prepared a beautiful foundation for this discussion with perfectly thought-provoking quotes, for which I'm also grateful. That I didn't realize you were going to say all that, Karen, in introduction. But with that as background, you'll understand what the next thing is. You can't hear me? Is it me? Is that better? Oh, sorry. Oh, you'd think I'd know that by now, wouldn't you? So, after what Karen said, you'll understand in my next bit. George Carlin said, if you scratch a cynic, underneath you'll find a disappointed idealist. So after 10 years as a teacher and 40 years in the political arena, I find I am just that, a cynic, hiding the disappointed idealist. As a teacher, I was never disappointed. My children, they were my gifts. Now I'm going to mix metaphors wildly here. Years on the front line, in the trenches, and at the grassroots of politics have clouded but not diminished my idealism or my fervent hope that people will learn to value the gift we, in a free world, have in the democratic process. I have deep respect for the fifth principle of Unitarian Universalism, the right of conscience, and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. Desmond asked me to speak about engaging in the democratic process. And the more I contemplated that, the more evident it became that it could potentially be a minefield. Every one of us has our own interpretation of the democratic process, and that's perfect. So rather than stand here and pontificate, I'd prefer to hear from you and engage in a discussion on that topic, but time constraints and so on, we might not be able to talk as much as we would like, because it will mean different things to different people. The word common to each quotation is people. So when I say, what do you think? I hope that opens the floor to your sharing your thoughts and your feelings. One of Lincoln's often quoted comments, apart from that other one, which was great, is a portion of a speech made during the early months of the Civil War. When Lincoln's law partner, William Herndon, gave the president a book of abolitionist preacher Theodore Parker's Sermons and Speeches, it included a sermon titled The Effect of Slavery on the American People, delivered on July the 4th, 1858. In that sermon, Parker said, democracy is direct self-government over all the people, for all the people, by all the people. According to Herndon, Lincoln marked those words in his copy before he wrote the Gettysburg Address. And that other quote from Lincoln in today's order of services is perfect. Another quote in a similar vein, as in the book of Judges, the people got the leaders they deserved. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong on that one. In researching that particular quote, I happened upon a variation in an old saying that people get the government they deserve. That's a deep thought, right? And therefore, it is the duty of the people, especially in a democracy, to elect right type of people to administer their country. And if they elect casually, they shall not get right people. End quote. And all this began because I was looking for the origin of, in a democracy, people get the government they deserve. Often attributed to Alexis de Tocqueville. Going even further back, Plato observed, and this is a long time ago, right? Plato. One of the penalties for refusing to participate in politics is that you end up being governed by your inferiors. And those are variations on a theme. Democracy, as we understand it, as we would like to understand it, offers everyone a voice of equal weight. So I don't know if you can remember the quotes, but I'm going to throw it out to you. What do you think about the comparison between one of the penalties for refusing to participate in politics is that you end up being governed by your inferiors, and in a democracy, people get the government that they deserve? The question is, think about it. Well, I'm not just talking municipally, but look at it provincially, federally, municipally, and regionally. What do you think? Are we being governed by our inferiors? You don't have to speak out if you don't want to compromise yourself, but think about it and look at the people who have been elected to take decisions on our behalf, to represent our interests. Yes.
Run for office, and we don't just elect, you know, the person sitting next to us. Oh, you're a great person. We get to elect people who choose themselves to run for office, and they often have way more money and resources and backing than all the rest of us. Our government represents what the highest echelon of the social system, and most of us are not in that category.
That's right, it appears. Now, I'm not saying that the 1% is superior. But you're right. They've got more money than most people. Is that democratic? I don't think so. Doreen.
Not enough people vote, particularly municipally and regionally.
Right. I was watching TVO the other night. They said the 70% vote federally, but only, less than 50% actually turned out to vote provincially. In Niagara Falls, where I live, the voter turnout in the last municipal election was 37%. I mean, think about that. 37% of the people who bothered to go out and vote elected that municipal council. That's not even the voice of the people. It troubles me greatly. Yes. Well, I know exactly what you mean. There's a couple of answers to that. One of them was when I was with the independent MLA, and I tell you, that was the most amazing, wonderful time. We didn't belong to any party. We just worked for the constituents, and that was it. And we use a joke and say, we need an extra box on the ballot that says none of the above. And you can go to the polling station and you can write, I choose not to vote. Now, it doesn't count for anybody, but it is taken note of when the ballots are counted. So if that feels comfortable for you, then you can. That's your right to do that. A lot of people don't know, but you can. And I don't know what it'll take to shape things up. There was somebody else's hand up.
You said that only 37% of people voted in the civil rate that's not the voice of the people. Well, maybe the other 63% just said no.
Ah, but you see, I'll challenge that. Because I wish people would understand if they don't vote, you're right. They are voting.
Yes.
But they're not voting no. They're voting for the status quo because they're not challenging it.
Yeah. And in some countries, it's mandatory to vote. You don't vote, you're fine.
Yeah.
Australia. Yeah. Do we know if people are more involved in knowing what's going on in politics or not necessarily? I think it's a good idea because at least you would know that there's an election.
Yeah, but half the time I didn't even know there was one.
Yeah, well.
Isn't it June the 7th of the provincial election?
Yes.
You've been given notice, June the 7th.
Yeah.
One of the things that I agree, I honestly think voting should be mandatory. But then we have to look before that. What's the foundation? You know, it's all very well saying everybody has to vote. But leading up to that, are we insisting that everybody be informed? Mm. Are we insisting that everyone has the capacity to make an informed, reasoned, logical vote? And it goes back to what you said about the money. Do we really have choices of the people that would truly represent us? Or who are they representing? I'll get to that later. But one of the things, I'm going to jump around on this, because one of the things that troubles me very greatly is that there's not enough weight given to teaching our young people. And I don't care how early, when I was teaching, my children were aged between 7 and 11. I was teaching them then. At that age, how important it was to pay attention to what people said. How important it was to be involved in decisions or in community things that happen. And my children thought this out. They were 7. And of course the 11-year-olds were way up there, but because they'd had years with me. But my daughter grew up in politics. She was 2 when I started. And I can remember taking her to a party conference one time, and she was applauding in parts of, okay, it was Margaret Thatcher at that time. I've expanded a lot since then, but she was applauding in parts of Margaret Thatcher's leader's speech where even grown-ups weren't. But when I watched her hands, I thought, oh my goodness, she's right, that was a good point. We underestimate our children to such an extent that we almost ignore them until they're 20 and then say, okay, shape up, do something. But we have to, Doreen.
Look what's happening in the States with the teenagers.
Right.
After the
yeah.
They have mobilized across the country for gun control.
Isn't it wonderful? Doesn't it make your heart feel good to see these kids? So, do we get the government we deserve? And the reason I brought that up is because you, every one of you, you're all the decision makers. You're the people who make a democracy work. You, in many ways, are the influencers of your friends, your children, and your neighbors. No democracy can function without the participation and involvement of the people. The alternative is what we see and hear that happens in authoritarian regimes. That's an obvious comparison, but what happens when this is a tricky one for some people, but I'm going to challenge you. What happens when what is perceived to be party loyalty also means switching off individual God-given power of discernment and subduing an attitude, I've lost it, of respect and reverence towards our fellow citizens?
I'm fairly new on city council, and I quickly learned how things operate. Mm-hmm. He said, I can propose, and he said, I'm in favor of what you're doing, I can propose it, but I need a seconder for my motion. You know what happens with that? Okay, I'll try and find somebody. He says, well, okay, I will, if you will second my motion mm-hmm. on something else, maybe nothing that I particularly agree with, but to get the motion on there, I have to compromise. He says, and this is the way the political system operates, actually, from there. You cannot stand alone, because you get nowhere with that. You have to have somebody who will support you, but there are always conditions to that kind of support. And you see, good many, such as he, good many politicians who are very good people and this kind of thing going into this, but then they have to learn the art of a compromise. And with that, it almost starts to change their personality. I've seen this happen. It changes who they really are. And you can see almost this with the Prime Minister on this...
Kinder Morgan.
Yes, that kind of thing of having to say, well, you know, but I have to support this in terms of the other pressures I'm on in order to retain the support I need to get elected again.
That raises another question, though. Do they do it for now? Do they take the right decision at the right time? Or does everything hinge on, I've got to get re-elected? Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah. And I walked out shaking because I thought, what's the point of trying to be rational about things when people don't necessarily work on the basis of a reason?
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. Backtracking a little bit, the first election I fought, well, I didn't fight it, I was on campaigning, was the year that Margaret Thatcher became the first woman Prime Minister in Britain. I had just become constituency president, and it was announced, we were having a fundraiser, and it was announced that Callaghan had gone to the Queen and we were now going into a general election. You can imagine, I was scared witless. That was also the year that Éire Nive was blown up as he left the Houses of Parliament. And we had to have a briefing by the police before we had any meeting. They had to search every building around us to make sure there were no bombs. And I'm out there knocking on the doors. I'm not kidding.
we were in a Labour, you don't, you know, in Britain it's Labour and Conservative, but we have Liberal and Social Democrats, so there's a range. But Sheffield, where I was known as the Socialist Republic of South Yorkshire. And that's a socialist, not NDP. It's socialist communist. They flew the red flag over the town hall on May Day. But you can imagine, there I am, where we all are, but knock, knock, knock. I heard language I had never heard in my life before. As soon as I said Margaret Thatcher, bleh. But we reduced that Labour MP's majority by 30,000 votes. And that was significant. So the reason I'm telling you that is that's what happens when people get actively engaged, where they actually go out and they knock on the doors and they talk to people. You're right. If someone's died in the wool, whatever, you're never going to change their mind. But that's what happens when people get tied up to a party. They seem to switch off their reasoning and their logic. And they're not able to look at individual party platforms and look at them reasonably and say, okay, what are they really saying? Are these promises? Are these commitments? Have they costed it out? What's it going to cost all of us in the long run? Are they paper promises? Or, and I saw this in BC, are they going to become the government and then say, ah, do you know, they left us in such a mess. There's no way we can do all those things we said we were going to do. Haven't we heard that before? So I'm not speaking on behalf of any party. I'm just saying it's really, really important in all our daily interactions when it comes up, if it comes up, we say to people, well, let's look at what they're promising and what is that impact going to be on us? It's not about, you know, they used to say religion and politics should never be discussed in polite circles. And, yeah, it's dangerous at times. My cousin refused to speak to me for 2 years once. But we have to look at what are our own values? What do we think is important, not just for us, but for all of society? And we need to look before we vote. On the point of party loyalty, the question, sorry, I was going to, was what takes precedence? And I feel it's safe, because I've been here before, to say that those of us here are of the age to appreciate a quote from my daughter's competitive riding years. She'd come out of the ring and say, we had some good rounds and we learned a lot. That's when she didn't get a ribbon or anything. you and I, we've all had some good rounds. And we have learned a lot. So the question I want to toss out there is, how can we share that learning with younger people who may benefit from our sharing our wisdom and the lessons we've learned? It's not about preaching to them. It's about engaging them in a discussion and asking them what they're thinking. I was with some young people the other day, and one of them said, we need to ask, what sort of a world do you want your children to see? And one of the other people said, we all did that 50 years ago. How well has it worked out?
I have a really problem that bothers me with my daughter and granddaughter, and they don't vote. They refuse to vote and this kind of thing. And I got into discussion the last time with my daughter about this. She finally said to me, don't discuss this with us any longer. It's affecting our relationship. And really, don't. You have your opinion. I have mine. And I don't want to discuss it any longer. And I don't know how, it's probably been my approach to her. But does bother me that they hold down that kind of attitude.
Sometimes, and I've been guilty of this myself, sometimes we don't realize that we're putting off the energy of taking a very definitive stand. And sometimes, my son-in-law was mine. And I used to spend ages thinking, why am I reaching, why am I meeting such resistance here? Because to my mind, he was closed-minded. Well, then obviously I must have been closed-minded because I didn't hear what he was saying. So non-contentious, take an issue that's not definitely one side or the other politically, but something that you know affects your family. And just very quietly say, gosh, I wonder what the best way would be. What would be the best outcome in this? What do you think would be the best outcome? And that's not taking party side. That's just saying, let's just put all that aside. What do you think would be the best outcome there? And to answer your question about not voting, as I said, my daughter grew up in politics. And you can imagine, when what is it, 19 they can vote? Her 19th birthday was coming up. And she was so excited. And she came home one night and she said, Mum, don't be mad at me. I said, about what? She said, I can't vote. I said, well, you must have a good reason for it. She said, well, you know I've waited my whole life to be able to vote. And I can't vote. I said, well, why can't you vote? Because I've gone to every single all candidates meeting. I've read the material from every single candidate. And there's not one of them I believe. I said, well, Poppet, I respect that. That's wonderful. You've done your homework. And if you choose not to vote, I support you on that. The point is, we need to ensure that everyone takes the trouble to find out what each individual stands for. Municipally, there shouldn't be financial restrictions. But well, she, I think she did go and spoil her ballot. But she said she couldn't vote for anyone. Yes.
It's been said that our government system is such that it leads to generally minority governments, that the idea that people are forced to compromise, people are forced to talk to each other, and the downside is that not as much, that there's a lot of energy going into the talk and not getting legislation passed.
You're absolutely right.
Of course, the absolute opposite was Mr. Harper, who would jam a dozen different bills into one, and you got to debate that for a small amount of time and vote on the whole works.
Yeah, but you see the problem there, they didn't even get to debate it. Because he brought in omnibus bills where they didn't have the time. They didn't have the time to consume everything in the bills. There wasn't adequate time for debate. Therefore, they were probably charged with filibustering and he would force the vote. What a lot of people don't realize is the way he totally destroyed the democratic system. I'm talking one person, this is not party. Harper got elected, and a great many people became members of the government, the ruling party. What we all understand as the ideal in the democratic process is that when someone is elected, they have the voice of their constituency. Let's not forget, there were members of the Conservative caucus that he ejected because they didn't agree with him. That is not democracy. That's autocracy. The other thing he did was, you know, at provincial level and federal level, that they, yeah, there's the government, the opposition, and blah, blah, blah. There's a system in place where there's what's called all-party select standing committees. And those select standing committees are set up so that everybody is from each party, that there are people from each party on sitting on that committee. And theoretically, they discuss issues before it goes to legislation or before it goes to a vote. If it's done correctly, most of it can be hashed out in standing committee stage before the government side drafts the legislation. What Harper did was he loaded the select standing committees. Therefore, opposition members and like the Green Party and so on, they were marginalized. Nobody paid any attention to them. In the days before Harper, and I that's federally, but provincially, I know, we talked to government and opposition members all the time, and they discussed things amongst themselves. So if there was a problem, it was quite normal for them to go to somebody else on the other side and say, you know, this is not working. And they would come up with a solution before it went to the House for debate. It doesn't happen anymore. Well, certainly didn't happen under Harper, because he neutralized the whole system. So we can talk about democracy in global terms like this, but it's incumbent upon every one of us to pay attention to what's really going on. You know, when I was in BC, there was a great move from the Reform Party to the independent member I was with. And it was really interesting because we got this delegation and they came to Jack and they said, we want you to go Reform. And Jack said, why would I go Reform? I'm independent. No, we want you to go Reform. So we're sitting there, and there's just the two of us talking to them, and I said, so do you mean Reform provincially or federally? Because you don't have a provincial Reform Party. It would be federally. And Jack said, I'm not interested. And I said, well, why don't you have a Reform Party provincially? Oh, no, we're not ready for that. No, we don't want to do that. And I said, well, you wouldn't believe the letters that we get from people saying, why don't we have a Reform Party in BC? So why don't you do put your money where your mouth is, form a Reform Party in BC if you think it's going to work? People want an alternative. The truth is, I've got to say this, the only thing that I thought was good about that was the right of recall. Preston Manning, I don't agree with a lot of what he does, but the one thing he said that I thought was valid was that in every election, every level of government, the people should have the right of recall. So if you have a member that's not doing their job, the citizens of that municipality, constituency, wherever, should have the right to get up a petition, to get off their beam ends and get up a petition and say, we want that person recalled because they're not doing their job. There is still the right of recall in BC, but Gordon Campbell twisted it in such a way that even though two constituencies did do that, he found a way around it. So it needs to be refined. So I'm sorry, am I going over time, Karen? Yes. Okay. All right. I think this has been great. Thank you so much. One of the things that we might be able to do, and I don't know how we're going to do it, because they've taken civics as a proper subject out of the curriculum. heard an interview the other day where now it's online. How do you teach children, young people, civics, with an online course? How do you teach them to discuss and debate? You don't, because it's all out there somewhere. I'd love to see us doing something more about that. So, the idealist under the cynic in me would prefer that there'd be no parties. Northwest Territories has a wonderful system. There are no parties. Nobody runs for any party. People run in the riding or the constituency. Whoever the people choose to represent them, that's represent their views. They all go to the legislature together. They meet for the first time, probably. In the Northwest Territories, there's no government and opposition that are two sword lengths apart. It's circular. And the group that get elected to go to the capital, they choose someone from within their group to be the premier. Now that, to me, is healthy democracy. Thank you so very much for this opportunity.